We're holding on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, about a quarter of the way down the Amud line, begins the Hani. Okay, so we've been discussing like this. You have two psukim back to back in Parashat Shmini that tell us the fact that you're allowed to eat fish that have fins and scales, and you're not allowed to eat fish or other creatures that live in the water that don't have fins and scales. So we've been discussing that since in those psukim it mentions by yamim or anacholim. So then it means there's an implication there that this whole concept only applies to the seas or lakes. Yamim has both meaning, and the streams or rivers, but not, for example, bodies of water like Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, where the water stands still, where you just have their pits of various shapes in the ground. The water doesn't move from one place to another in them.
And therefore that
something about these dinim does not apply to them. So we ended up saying that what it means is that water that's in Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, and also in Kalim, we said we have two things in the Pesukim over there, one which is Beferish and one which is not so Beferish, which we're going to discuss soon, which one is which, that one of them ultimately we use towards a Klal or Prat or Klal to say not only things that are similar to Yamim and Nechalim, in that the water in them is Noivim, it wells up from the ground. So only in those do you have
Noivim means flow.
Well, we're going to discuss soon. There's flowing and there's welling up from the ground. Are those the same thing or are those different things? We're going to get to that soon. But anyway, the point is, we in the Gemara, we use the expression Noivim, which means, as Brai said, use the expression Noivim, which means literally wells up. So bodies of water, where fresh water is always coming out, that's literally what Noivim means, then those kind, you're only allowed to eat creatures in them that have fins and scales and not ones that don't, such as worms. As opposed to Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, which are not similar to that, because they're excluded by the Klal or Prat or Klal, those you would be allowed to eat worms that develop in those, as long as the Gemara says soon it doesn't actually go out of the water at any point. Out of the area where the water is, whatever. And then on top of that, you have earlier in the pasuk where it says "eszet toichlu mikol hashev amoyim," and we said that those words are extra. What does it mean? These you can eat. If it says at the end of the pasuk "osam teichelu," then it comes to include also that the same is true as far as kesem.
Isn't mayan included in noivim?
No, mayan would be included in noivim, sure.
Does it matter if it's naturally occurring, like a lake or lake?
So far, we're saying that not. We said that charisin and neitzin, even though those are man-made, but since the water flows in those, because unlike Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, which are water pits, charisin and neitzin are various kinds of canals or ponds or things like that, which have a natural water supply into them.
Burrs sometimes fill up with water naturally.
Not really. The difference between a burr and a bear is that a burr is a cistern. It's just it fills up with a cistern. Yeah.
Yeah.
It fills up with water. The only way it fills up with water is generally speaking, is from rainwater, or if you fill it up, yeah. It doesn't know. They're usually plastered. In fact, burrs are chained by abed kippa, so that you don't have any outflow from them. But it means there's also no inflow to them either. As opposed to a be'er, a well, that's mayim novim. That's water that wells up from the ground. So yeah, a spring.
Mayan and be'er are included in mayim.
That would be included in mayim novim. So when we said bayam and v'nacholim, then the pashtos, it would include those as well. As opposed to, so therefore the klal, the prophet klal, would exclude Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, where the water doesn't come into them from the ground, it comes only from rainwater or artificial filling. And furthermore, since we had earlier in the pasuk, Efzer Tochlu Mikol HaShev Amoyim, then that teaches us in addition the same thing applies to Kalim. We wouldn't say the other way around. We wouldn't say that the klal, the prophet klal, excludes Kalim, because then the Efzet Tochlu is not accomplishing anything. If you say that the only thing excluded by the Klal of Prophet Klal is Kalim, meaning that Bodas, Shichin, and Maris are included and the same rule would apply, you couldn't eat worms in them, then the Efzet Tochlu is not serving any function.
Well, unless it's something else.
No, but that's why we said, no, that's the thing. That's what we said. There's two heterim in those stukim, where the Braita called them one Sosum and one Mephodosh, and we said that ultimately that's what it is. One of them is used as
so
part of the Klal.
Connection to the Klal of Prophet Klal.
They're the most excluded from the Klal of Prophet Klal, right.
And they come only because it says...
Only because it says Efzet Tochlu. What it is like this, in other words. Without Efzet Tochlu, you would also know, because once you have a Klal of Prophet Klal, you're excluding Bodas, Shichin, and Maris, certainly all the more so you're excluding Kalim. However, since you have a pasuk as zet toichlu, then that teaches that you're not re-including it as for iser, but re-including it for heter. But the point is, if you didn't have that, you would mistakenly think to run the kal v'chomer and say the to run the kal v'chomer and say the only thing you're excluding from the kal v'chomer is kalim. Because you have two psukim, and therefore, of necessity, one of them refers to kalim and one refers to something else, that leads us to say, therefore, that the kal v'chomer is excluding boris shechen umayrus. You're allowed to eat the creatures in there, and then also, and then it's the tohu is also as far as kalim.
Otherwise,
you would think to include that boris shechen umayrus are included together with yamim and nechalim because they do have in common that they're all bodies of water that are in the ground.
Except the kalim are not natural.
Okay, one second. Okay, let's get this straight. You have yamim and nechalim, which have two things about them. Number one, they're in the ground. Number two, the water in them is fresh water. It's not stagnant. Number two, you have bodas, shich, and amiris, which are also in the ground. So in that one sense, they're like yamim and nechalim. On the other hand, the water in them is stagnant. So in that sense, they're not like it. And the third one is kalim, which are not in the ground, and the water in them is stagnant. If we only had one thing in the pasuk, if we only had the kwal of prata kwal, you would say, what are we excluding on the basis of the kwal of prata kwal? What are we saying is not at all like the prat would be kalim. Therefore, we would say the prat, which mentions yamim and nechalim, would be any bodies of water that are in the ground. Therefore, it would result in any bodies of water that are in the ground. You're not allowed to eat the worms in them. But that would be wrong, because the fact is, we're saying you are allowed to eat the ones that are in Bordas, Shechen, and Myris. Therefore, we need two things. We need a kwal of prata kwal, and we need the words eszer toichlu. And between the two of those things, we understand, now it clarifies, we don't need one of them to, it's not that the kwal of prata kwal is excluding only kalim, because then the other one is not functioning for anything. Rather, if the kwal of prata kwal, we draw the prat as narrowly as possible. We say, in order for something to be included in the prat, or in the class that resembles the prat, it has to be similar to the yamim and nechalim, not just that it's in the ground, but also that the water in it flows, also that it's noivim. And that excludes bodas, shechen, and amiris. That is made clear by the fact that we have a zet toichlu, which means kalim. So ultimately what it is, of these three types of bodies of water, so far we're saying only the worms in yamim and nechalim and other things that are similar to them, like charisin and ne'isim, all of which have this in common that the water flows into them. Those, you're not allowed to eat anything that doesn't have fins and scales. But birdus, shechen, and myris, you're allowed to because they're excluded by the kala, prata, kala. And kalim, you're also allowed to.
So kalim, we're building this in reverse. We knew that kalim you're allowed to, didn't we?
Well,
that's why we built all that.
Well, kind of. I mean, yeah, okay. If you want to look at it that way, fine. I mean, the point is, yeah, since we had two things, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Right. So,
fine.
Therefore, we really don't need as toichlu.
We need as that toichlu because otherwise we would think the klal of prat or klal tells us that kalim are mutter. We would think, therefore, that the klal of prata klal is telling us anything that is at all similar to yamim or nechalim, meaning even bodas, shechen, or myris, where the water is stagnant, are still included, and you're still not allowed to eat them if they don't have fins and scales, because they're in the ground. They're similar to the prat in that way. Doesn't matter. We would think that the prat, there's different ways of drawing the prat. We could draw it on the basis of it being in the ground, or we could draw it on the basis of flowing. They're similar enough in that they're in the ground.
But they're not similar enough.
Okay, they're similar enough that we might have thought to include it because of the holocaustic law. And therefore, yes. Okay. So that was all so far one braisa and the analysis of it. Now we have another way of learning. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a braisa as follows. Like this. We discussed yesterday in the previous braisa that we have two klolim and a prat in these circuit. We said you have eszet tochlu mikol asher b'moyim, kol asher lo itznasa v'chesed b'mayim, which are two pratim, two klolim, because b'mayim means anything that's in any kind of water. And then you have a prat, by yamim v'nechalim. So we said what we do is we switch them around, we put the prat between the two klolim.
Instead of
kval kval prat, we have kval prat kval.
But in the other base vendors that we said, they don't hold that one?
Well, that's what we're going to say. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, b'mayim shtei pamim, they say because it says the two klolos right next to each other, ain't the kval of prat, they say therefore you cannot understand it as a kval of prat kval because it's out of order. Ela riba umiut. Rather, you have to douch in it as a ribui and a miut, which is a different way of learning. Interesting thing, by the way, Rishonim asked the question, and it said there's a note over here on the side that mentions it. We say every day in davening, Rabbi Shmuel Amr B'Shloish HaSimir HaSatron HaDreshes. If he's davening with Ribu Yomiyot, that's not mentioned over there, it's the 14.
No, right.
You have a number of answers that Rishonim give, including maybe it's included, it's a subset of Kral, the Prophet Kral, maybe. I mean, here we're davening it differently, but nevertheless, maybe it's included in that general thing. Or the Sefer HaKrisus says maybe Rabbi Shmuel is listing only midas that everybody agrees to. Ribu Yomiyot, Ribu. We have a number of times in Shas. We have it's machloekas tanoim, whether we actually use it to limud at all.
So therefore, he doesn't include
it. So he may not have included it in his braisa, in his braisa, because it's not universally agreed to. They're the ones that he's listing over there.
So he
himself may hold by. Yet another answer is that Dvei Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel don't always agree. We find in one or two places in Shas where Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, meaning the Talmidim, disagreed with him.
And here we have
Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, so it could be that. Yeah, and also it's Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, whereas over there it's Rabbi Shmuel himself. Okay. Anyway, so you have a Ribu Mir. Bamayim riba, the word bamayim is a riboy, both times actually. Bayamu manacholim miyot. Then you have bayamu manacholim in the lakes and in the rivers is a miyot because it means only in those bodies of water. Bamayim chazav riba. Then the bamayim, which is the second bamayim, which we said came before the prat. He says again, you're not darshining as a klal of prat klal because it's out of order. Therefore, you're darshining as a riboy miyot riboy. So therefore, the second bamayim. Chaz of a river is another river. It means any kind of body of water.
It's the first river.
It's the second one, Bamayim, and then Bamayim. Therefore,
it's the second Bamayim, but the first Klal was...
The first Klal was also Bamayim.
A ribui.
We have a ribui. Bayam of Anacholim is a mirror. Bamayim is another river. Therefore, ribo miyot beriba. So you have a ribo, you have an inclusion, umiyot, an exclusion, beriba, and another inclusion, riba hakol. So therefore, it comes to include everything. Now, the difference is, one second. A klal of prat of klal works like this. You find what do the things mentioned in the prat have in common, and then you build a class based on those things. So what are the class that you're building has to be fairly similar to it in order to be included in the prat. On the other hand, riba miyot ribu means basically you're including everything. The only thing you're excluding is the one thing that is the least similar to what you're to the miyot. So in that case, that would result in my rabbi. So my rabbi. So what is Rabbi Shmuel saying is included through his ribui miyot ribui? That the Tanakama did not say. Harisin u'neitin le'isura. It would be included. Well, I mean, the Tanakama didn't spell it out, but it would be including harisin u'neitin that the isur applies to them also. Given that harisin u'neitin have water that has nezea, the water flows in them, then they would be included on that. But what are we being mimayit? What are we excluding? Bordas, shichon, umayrus, lahatera. We're excluding bordas, shichon, umayrus, that they're mutter because they're very dissimilar from yamim and nacholim. So far, we're saying, okay. On the other hand, now, according to Rashi, actually, it comes out there's no actual machloikis in halacha between Tana and Rabbi Shmuel on the previous braisa. All it is we're talking about what's the mechanism by which we arrive at this din. But there's no actual argument. They both would agree that Kalim is mutter and also that Bertus, Shichon, and Myrus is mutter. They just arrive at it by different ways, by Klal, Prat, or Klal versus by Ribui, Miyot, Ribui. So let's finish that part, and then we'll talk about that Tosfos and most other Rishonim say there is actually a difference in halacha between them, which by the way is very negayatos nowadays. So we'll get to that in a minute also. Okay. So the question is, Ema, why would you say it that way? Who says that the ribui miut ribui? Who says the thing that you're excluding is bodas shichon umayrus? Ema, maybe you should say, my riba bodas shichon umayrus leisura. Maybe say that you're including the cisterns, that they're also, because they do have a certain similarity to yamim and nacholim, seeing as how they're in the ground. My miyet miyet kalim, and then what are you excluding? You're excluding only kalim, because they're the least similar thing.
Right.
And again, the answer is, in kain toichu mayahanulay. The answer is, Konrad Rebbe Shmuel would also say, as we said in connection with the first Braitha, after all, we have to do something with that Toichlu. As Zet Toichlu, Mikhail Hashem Amoyim, has to tell us something. If we said the only thing we're saying that it's mutter to eat things without fins and scales in is Kalim, then, you would say that on the basis of the Ribui, Mir Ribui, then Toichlu would be redundant, exactly. Right. Okay, so the question now becomes this. if according to the first braisa, where we said we're doing a klal, a proper klal, then okay, we understand why he was including, we understand why he was including charitzin and neitzin. We understand why he was excluding boris, shichin, and myris, because after all, we have to figure out what's more similar to the pras and what's less similar to the pras. Only what's fairly similar to the pras is going to be included, and boris, shichin, and myris are not fairly similar because they only have the one similarity because they're in the gwen. But if we're saying ribui miur to ribui, then we're saying basically we should be including everything. We're only excluding one thing. So therefore, we should say the epochana. So therefore, maybe we should flip it around. Maybe we should say charitzin and neitzin are mutter, and boris, shichin, and myris should be osir. After all, I mean, if all we're trying to do, if all we're saying with the ribui miut ribui is, which is tonet v'rabbi Shmuel's way, we're just saying we want to exclude the one thing, we want to exclude one thing, so why are you picking on boris, shichin, and myris and excluding them? Instead, pick on charitzin and neitzin, which are less, in a certain way, are less similar to.
You just said previously that charitzin and neitzin are much more similar to.
But on the other hand, they are somewhat similar, but they're also somewhat dissimilar.
But they're
so
similar.
Well, that's actually the answer. One second. The answer is Kiritoni Matisya. The answer is based on what Matisya, that was his name, get Torah Brice, the Tani Matisya Bar Yehuda, Mayra Isa Lurabis Boris Shikhan Umiris Lahatero Lahoti Kharitan and Itzim Lisura. Why, according to Tonad Vairabi Shmuel, and for that matter, according to the first Brice, why are we including Boris Shikhan Umiris that you're allowed to eat the creatures in them? Well, Lahoti Kharitan and Itzim Lisura. And on the other hand, we're excluding the Kharitan and Itzim, we're excluding the Kharitan and Itzim from the Heter and saying that whatever in them is also. The reason is Marbani Boris Shichin Umiris. The answer is we're including Boris Shichin Umiris Shein Asurim Kekelin because the water in them is stopped up. There's no inlet, there's no outlet. So it's like Kalin in that sense. Because as opposed to Charitzin and Isin, Shein Asurim Kekelin.
Right.
We're right, where the water is not stopped.
That's right.
Now, fine. All good. According to Rashi, it comes out, in other words, that Rashi says that there's no actual argument between the two brises and between the two things. We're just arguing according to Rashi, there's no difference between Tonet Brei Rabbi Shmuel and the previous brisa as far as practical halacha. According to Tosfos and many other Rishonim, not really. Because there's a difference, they point out, that in the previous discussion, we mentioned the concept of noivim, which is water, which is where that water wells up from the ground. Over here, we're using a different expression, asurin, meaning that the water is held in one place. There's no current in it. Now, those aren't necessarily always the same thing. You can have a...
Asurin is canals, you said?
No. Charitzin and Itzin are various kinds of canals. The word Asurin in our Gemara that we just quoted means stopped. In other words, that the water stays in one place. Now, in a pit, for example, it's like that. The water doesn't move. But on the other hand, the point is, not necessarily are those always the same thing. You can have bodies of water that are not noivim. You don't have fresh water coming into them. But on the other hand, you have a flow. They're large enough to have some kind of current, to have the water move from point A to point B. So according to the first braisa, we would say that charitzin and itzin they may not be noivim, so in that sense they're not totally similar to yamim and lachalim because you don't have fresh water coming into them from underground. Never the charitzin and itzin, not necessarily. On the other hand, they're large enough to have water, to have motion of water in them.
Okay.
So therefore, in other words, for example, let's say when it's windy or whatever, and the water ripples. So therefore, the first braisa would say that those are included in the prat. They're light. They are like yamim and nechalim. Because the water moves in them. It may not come from underground, but it moves in them. As opposed to tonet vei rabbi shmuel. The ribui miut ribui. Actually, the other way around. The first braisa that would say that.
Yeah,
Okay, no, I had it right the first time. Yeah, the first braisa would say haritzin and itzin would be osir, the things that have fins and scales in them, because in that sense they are like the yamim and the chalim. The second one would say that after all, but on the other hand, yeah, maybe the water. But on the other hand, the second braisa, the ribui miyus ribui, would say no. On the other hand, you want to have though, but the fact is, no fresh water is coming into them. Sure, the water moves in them, but that's not necessarily enough to make them similar. The last line of Tosfos. No, I've had it right the second time. Sorry, very very confusing here a little bit. Sorry, the first braisa would say that they are osur. The second one would say charitzin and neitzim are like kalim. And therefore, because even though the water in them moves, on the other hand, there's no fresh water coming into them. They're not noivim. In other words, again, not like Rashi, who says that noivim and asurim essentially amounts to the same thing. Tosfos is differentiating between them. If you have something which is not noivim, but is asurim, namely the charisim and the isim, then they don't have an inlet of fresh water into them. But on the other hand, the water does move around in them. Then the first braisa would say that the worms in them are osur, and the second braisa would say that they're mutter. They're more like the kalim in that sense.
Yes, they're very different from the kalim.
But nevertheless, the point is because we're using based on, so the second braisa is mentioning the concept about surim.
Right.
Okay. Now.
And by because of that, it's kalim and chalitim and itim are more similar than dissimilar.
Right. Right.
As opposed to the first braisa.
As opposed to the first braisa, right. Yeah. By the way, I mean,
it's still debatable even for the second, but with the word atzurim,
right?
Because the keli is really atzur, and the cheretz and the eretz is not.
Is more atzur because the water? No, because it is more atzur, but it flows within the thing. But there's no water going in and out of it.
What do you mean? There's no water going.
There's no water going in and out of a charitzin and eretz. So charitzin and eretz wouldn't be a canal necessarily. It would just
be
some kind of body of water that's large enough to have a. Maybe like a large lake or something, but whatever. The point is, it would be man-made, unlike a lake, maybe more like a reservoir or something. The point is, The point doesn't necessarily have an inflow or an outflow. But on the other hand, the water is able to move around in it. Let's say when it's windy or something. Yeah. So by the way, you know, I think many of us remember the whole issue that came up probably 15 years ago about the copepods in the water and what the deal with that is. Do you need filters? Do you not need filters? Our Gemara over here, of course, was quoted on both sides of the issue. I mean, a number of the issues that were brought up had to do with the question, are they large enough to be seen with the naked eye? But okay, I mean, it seems that they are. But among the points that were brought to bear by those who are matir was the whole thing that we're saying over here, that when they develop in kalim, then they're mutter, and part of the argument was they may well develop inside the pipes. They don't necessarily develop in the lakes and reservoirs or whatever that feed into the pipes. They may develop in the pipes themselves. In that case, one of the arguments that was brought to bear is they can be like kalim. And in that case, in that case, they'd be mutter, because we said if they develop in kalim, then fine. You might have a speck faith on it. So there were a lot of ink was spilled on it, pro and con. So, but those are some of the ideas behind why you have Adra Yemazer, that you have some people who have filters and some who don't. You should, and that's many people took that view, and many of the Rabbanim who dealt with this took that view. That look, after all, it's a matter of Doraisa, so what are we playing games with it? But on the other hand, you had respectable Rabbanim, Belsky, Oliver Shalom was one of them, and there were others who took the view that it is not just. Again, because they may develop in the pipes, so at most you have a speck faker. Fine, you say a speck faker because it would just get into your particular water, et cetera. There were all kinds of points that were brought to bear on it.
You can't analyze the whatever and find out where it's native to?
It's not so much where it's native to, it's where it develops. So yeah, one of the arguments you can find if you
don't find this in the excludes most lakes and reservoirs, then it's more the reason to be certain that it's in the pipes, and if it does grow from the pipes, it's definitely with it.
Right.
In the pipes.
I don't know.
If the eggs were in the pipes, then probably you would be.
Maybe. I don't know.
Take a sample of 1,000 pipes, and it turns out that it's...
I don't know. They had there were people who argued that in fact biologically the way they do develop in open water and not in pipes. Whatever. There was quite a lot of argument about it, pro and con. All right. Onward. Okay, we said in the first braisa, we mentioned that there is a heter in the psukim that is chosum and a heter that is mekfoyrish. We had in those two psukim, we had one heter for eating worms that develop in certain kinds of bodies of water that we said was mekfoyrish, that's clearly stated in the pasuk, and then we had another one that was chosum that was not clearly stated. So hey chosum behe mekfoyrish. Which of those two is the chosum? Which one is the mekfoyrish? Now remember, we have two. Chosum means concealed, means hidden. In other words, we have a heter there, but the how you get the heter out of the pasuk is not so obvious. As opposed to you have another one which is mefurish, which is clear. So for that purpose, we need to again have. Chosum means that we have a heter in the pasuk, but how we're deriving that heter from the pasuk is not so clear. As opposed to mefurish means we can clearly see how the pasuk is implying for us that it's mutter. The heter of creatures without fins and scales in certain bodies of water, where we ended up, where the Braisa had said that we have a heter of Mephurdish and heter of Stam, where both of them we said refer to Kalim, and then we said we have a follow across a file to tell us that it's not only Kalim but also Burdish, Shich, and Amiris. So here are the two psukim that are relevant. Let's put them up in front of us. These you can eat from anything that's in the water. Anything that has scales in the waters, in the rivers and in the lakes and the rivers. Then you can eat. Anything that doesn't have fins and scales, in the seas and in the rivers. Anything that swarms in the water. Any of the living creatures that are in the water. They're repulsive. Those are the specific. So which of those psukim teaches us, is the sosum, is one that we can learn from it, that there are creatures without fins and scales that we can eat, but it's not so clear how we're getting it. And the other one is more explicit, which one is which. So the Gibbon of Acha and Ravina. So Acha and Ravina argue which one is which. Chad Omar.
They're not explicit, they're very explicit.
Okay. Chad Omar, one of them says, Yesh loy mefodosh ve'ein loy sosum. One of these two Amoraim says as follows. The one that we're learning from the Pasuk, Eszeh Toichlu, when it says over there, Bayamim Manacholim, which means as opposed to Kalim, that one is clear. It means clearly that you're allowed to eat ones that in Kalim you're allowed to eat creatures that don't have fins and scales that developed in those cases. The other one, the Ein Loi Sosum, the next Pasuk that says, V'cholosha Ein Loi Snapa, because Chesed, Bayamim Manacholim, he says that one, the heter that you get from it to be able to eat things without fins and scales, is not so obvious. It is a heter. The Braisa mentioned that it's a heter, and we derive one from the other, but it's not so clear how we get it from the Pasuk. The Chad Omer, the other one, says the other way around. The one in Pasuk Yud, the second Pasuk, is the more clear one, the one in connection with creatures that don't have fins and scales. The one in Pasuk Tes, the first one that mentions anything that does have fins and scales, how we derive from that there are creatures without fins and scales that you're allowed to eat, he says that's the more obscure one. So my time of demand on a yeshlem forush. So whichever of these two amiroim, Rav Acha and Ravina, the one that says that the first pasuk tes is the clear one. Why does he say that? On what grounds does he say that we have a clearer heter in that pasuk? He says omalach, because he says because he'll tell you minehu to kamishdu or kalim, because the fact of the matter is it's from that very pasuk that we're deriving that kalim are mutter, because we said we have the word bayamu manacholim, and we have earlier in that pasuk eszeh toichlu, and we said between those two things it's clear that things in kalim are mutter, so therefore that's what the braisa is calling the explicit heter.
Straightforward, right.
As opposed to the next pasuk, where it says, that we derive from that only by Yamun Manacholim do you need fins and scales, but outside Yamun Manacholim you don't need. That is more sosum. That's less clear.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. My time in the Mandarama Aimloy Mephurdish, what about the opinion, the other Amurda, between Rav Acha and Ravina, who says that no, on the contrary, Pasuk Yud, the one that says Einloi, is the one from which we learn the clear heter. Where does he get that from? Amalach, as he says, Minehu to Kamishru. No, sorry, I went back. The reason is, why is it my time in the Manda Amal Einloi Mephurdish? The Haihu to Kamoichach Aheich, because this one, that second Pasuk, is the one that demonstrates about the first Pasuk that it's being Matu Kalin. In other words, if you didn't have the second pasuk, you would have no idea that the first one is being Matur Kalim. the e meheya, because if you only have the first positive, have amina, then you would have thought, as the Gemara thought at one point, at one stage of the argument before, just the opposite. Maybe the miut of Kalin is afagab de isle, nami le seichel. Maybe the pasuk is implying that if you have fish with fins and scales that develop in Kalin, you're not allowed to eat them. So the second pasuk that says the v'chol asha'en le snafel hachetet by yamim manchalim, that one clarifies for us that anything in kalim you're allowed to eat. Therefore, he calls that one the mefurish and the other one the sotum, because you need the second pasuk to explain the first pasuk for us. Otherwise, you would think that fish that grew in an aquarium are also okay.
Which are kalim.
So then, again, this argument of Rav Acha and Rav Inu, but Pashtus does not have any implications. But halacha is just how do we understand the brayso?
Okay.
Fine. Now that we've talked about all the theoretical issues behind the behind what we're allowed to eat and what we're not allowed to eat, in what kind of kalim and whatnot, so let's talk about some practicalities. Amar Rav Huna, lo lishvi inish shichra b'tzivyasa b'urta. A person should not strain beer, which in those days beer was usually shichra means beer. Lo lishvi, a person actually explains lishvi doesn't really mean pour. It doesn't really mean to strain. It means to pour. So you're pouring this beer, lishvi pouring. Shichra is beer, which in those days is usually made out of beer.
Pouring.
Shichra is Hebrew. Shafi is Aramaic.
It's the same word,
then. Bebashos, maybe. Okay. So lo lishvi inish shichra, a person should not pour out from one container into another, shichra, which is beer that was made out of dates, but sivyasa, through little pieces of wood. The Meiri points out that they wouldn't usually use in those days, when you wanted to strain something, you would use a cloth or something. Well, even nowadays, you use cheesecloth. They didn't want to do that with beer because the beer was fairly thick stuff. If you strained it through a cloth, you wouldn't get that much through. So therefore, instead, a common thing to do was you would put a bunch of like wood chips and wood slivers and things like that on top of you have larger spaces between them under the top keli or on top of the bottom keli, whatever, and then you'd pour through those, and that way you'd get at least some reasonable amount of straining done without, and then the beer would still be able to go through. So he says you should not do that b'urta at night. Why not? Dilma parish la'el mitzivyasa, because then what happens is you often find worms developing in this beer. So therefore, you have a problem. All this time, we've been saying you're allowed to eat the worms that are in kalim. Fine, but that's only as long as they stay in the kalim. Now what happens is you're pouring from one kalim into another. So what happens is you may have that a worm falls out from the top container onto the pieces of wood and straw and whatever. You won't see it. Later on, it ends up falling into the bottom cavity. The next day, you're going to see it in there. You're going to think it was in there all along. You're not going to realize that for a period of time, it was outside of the kalim, outside of the beer, and therefore it would be must, and therefore it would be also. Rabbi Nagershim says slightly differently. You could also have, for example, that the worm might be in the bottom container and then crawl up onto the pieces of wood and throw it up. The point remains. In other words, the point is you may have that it was out of the cavity.
But you know what?
No, because during the day you can notice. During the day, if a worm falls onto the things or it crawls up or whatever, you'll be able to see it. But at night you wouldn't be able to see it. So therefore, that's the problem. The worm may get separated from the liquid and end up on top of the wood and on top of the chips and straw and everything. The harder not the cup. So later on, it's going to fall into the cup and you're going to find it there the next day. La'el means above. V'had mitzivyasa of the wood. V'had nafal l'kasa. Later on, it'll fall into the cup. V'havei over mishum sheretz asheretz al aretz. Then the person's going to be over because he's going to be eating a sheretz that crawled on the ground. Because once it crawled a little bit on that wood, it's already called a sheretz aretz. Yeah, it's already a sheretz aretz.
Natural environment, it's on the ground.
Yeah. So the question is, in that case, then what are we talking about? You only have a problem if you're pouring from one container into another and straining it. Even in the original container it was in itself, let's say the original barrel of beer, Dilma Parish Ledoifna Demona, how do you know? You might have had that at some point the worm had crawled onto the inside wall of the container, Vahadil Nafalamana, and then it fell back down into the liquid. So why wouldn't that be a problem? The answer is Hasam Hainu Revise. Yes, but there it's all in the same place where it grew to begin with. So therefore, even though it's not physically in the liquid the whole time, as long as it's inside the same container, then it's still considered.
If it grew in the barrel, it could not have grown outside the barrel.
We're talking about, in other words, when you when you made this beer and closed up the barrel, there were no worms in it. Later on, you come sometime later after it's fermented and you find worms in it. So the worms obviously grew in there. Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of the way the Gemara seems to put it, I mean, the Gemara seems to take, on the surface, the Gemara seems to be taking the view that you have spontaneous generation, that the worms can develop on their own inside the beer. I mean, again, scientists, we've talked about before, scientists don't hold nowadays such a thing, so therefore it would be that if they came from eggs, fine, but the eggs are microscopic. A microscopic thing is halacha generally doesn't concern itself with.
So spontaneous generation halachically is therefore valid.
So therefore, in other words, as far as halacha is concerned, it may as well be spontaneous generation. It amounts to spontaneous generation, because even though it actually comes from an egg, if the egg's not visible, then as far as halacha is concerned, it doesn't exist. Right? And you have a different explanation, which we'll talk about later on, in connection with worms and fish. You have an explanation that Rabbi Cyril Belsky gives, which maybe is not so relevant to this one, but it's relevant to worms and animals and fish. He says parasites, where they're obligate parasites, they're called, the only way they can live as part of their life cycle is to be inside a host and then take nourishment from it. Then for that purpose also, halacha can consider them as though they're spontaneously generated, because without the host, they wouldn't be able to live for a while. So maybe such a thing would apply to these worms in the beer, but I don't know, not necessarily, I don't think you'd necessarily call them parasites, but whatever, okay. Anyway, the point is, so as long as it's inside the container, Heine Revise, it's still in the same place where it grew, so it doesn't matter whether it was above the liquid level or not. As long as it's inside the container, then you're still okay. So you don't have to worry about whether it was moving around inside the container and at some point was above the liquid. Now, the post can say, if it starts going out, if it ends up on the top rim or on the outside, then already you have a problem. But as long as the barrel's sealed, you're not going to have it. Okay. And umenot tamra, so the Gemara says, okay, where do you know that from? Maybe taka, it's only mutter if the worm remained in the liquid the whole time. So like this, the Tanya, because we learned in a Braisa, we just said that if you have a barrel of beer and you find worms in it later, you're allowed to drink the beer even though you've got the worms in it. At some point, the worms may have gone above the level of the liquid in the container and then they fell back in. Doesn't matter, we said. But how do we know that? Where's our proof for that? So like this, the Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Minayin l'rabis bodas shichen umayris. How do we know that you're allowed to include bodas shichen umayris, these various kinds of cisterns, which we said before, the worms in them are mutter, and therefore shesheicha v'shoyse mehen v'ein nivna. So you're allowed to bend down and drink from them, and you don't have to hold yourself back, worrying that there might be worms in there. That's why we said before, because you have the pasuk that says you can eat everything that's in the water, and that's the ribui that teaches us that anything in kalim or bodas shichen umayris were allowed, but you still have to ask. Now, on the face of it, shouldn't you have to be concerned? Maybe at some point, the worms that you're seeing now in the Bodas Shechinamiris, maybe they ran again above the surface, on the wall, the Hadr Nafel, and then they fell back in. You don't have to worry. Elahainu Rabise. Obviously, the answer is the Braita is not concerned about it because it's the natural place where it grew. It's considered as if it was still in the water.
From
Kaili to Kaili, or that they didn't go outside of Kaili, right, outside of the Bodas Shechinamiris, or outside. Now, so therefore, that answers the question as far as the beer. It's only a problem if you're filtering it and the worm may land on the filter. It's not a problem otherwise.
Why don't you just talk about the beer? Why not the wine and other liquids? Because
the pashtus, it's more common for there to be worms in beer, first of all, and second of all, given the Meiri's point that the beer was thick and therefore they couldn't strain it through cloth. Wine, other liquids, even if they regularly have worms in them, they usually strain them through cloth. So if you have any worms, you're going to see them. Sure, you remove them, and that's that. Only beer, apparently the beer they had in those days was much thicker. Okay. Fine. Tanya de Messiah. So Rav Chista says to Rav Huna, I have a braisa that supports what you're saying, that So we established just now, we had a braisa that implies that as long as the worms are still inside the bird of Shia Chomaira or the Kaili, then it's mutter. But more to the point, we had Rav Huna's point that once they go out of it, even if it's not on the ground per se, but only on the pieces of wood and straw and whatever, then already it's usher. So Rav Chista says, I have a braisa that supports you. A braisa says, when it says that you're not allowed to eat kol asheres asheres ala oretz, you're not allowed to eat any creeping things that creep on the ground, doesn't just mean the ground. The words, the alaharet l'rabis yavchushin shesinin on. That comes to include also yavchushin that was strained out of liquid. Rashi describes that yavchushin are like little gnat-like or little mosquito-like things that you sometimes find in wine cellars. So some kind of like midges or some such thing. Yeah. So there you go. So you have creatures like that in wine also. But if you strain them out and then you ate them, then the person is chayav. So Tamer to Sinanon. So therefore we see, why is it also? Why is he getting Malkus for it? Because he strained them out, so they were separated from the wine. Ha lo Sinanon, implying if he didn't strain them out, shoddy, then it should be Mutter. A number of Rishonim do not have these last six words in their Girsa, Taima de Sinanon, Holoi Sinanon Shari. According to them, the proof that Rav Chista is bringing to Rav Huna is the basic concept that you have that bugs that were in liquid and were strained out are also, which is exactly what Rav Huna was saying. That once they're strained out, then you have a problem.
A lot of
Rishonim learn that way. So
yeah, who doesn't have this?
I don't remember which ones exactly, but you have Okay. More on this topic. Amar Shmuel, kishus, a cucumber or a melon or whatever, some kind of vegetable. She's clear beibeha, if it develops worms while it's still growing, while it's still attached to the ground. Asura mishum asheret asheret alaret. The worms in those are also because it's called asheret asheret alaret. We had this briefly earlier in the parak talking about the fact that the worms don't live for 12 months. But the point is that he's saying, so it's not just, in other words, again, it's not just that the worms have to crawl on the ground to be author. If they developed in the fruit while it was still attached to the tree or to the plant, it's also author, even though it never actually touched the ground, because the fruit is attached to the tree, which is attached to the ground.
Okay. So it's considered the ground.
So therefore, it's considered the ground. The question is, lema messiah. So we say lema messiah, like, and we say that we can use the following braisa to support what Shmuel is saying. We have a braisa like this because we another braisa that we're going to quote that we should be able to use it as a proof for Shmuel. The Tani Chodah, because like this, we have one braisa that says we have two braisas. One braisa says as follows: Al Ha'aretz, when the pasuk says that you're not allowed to eat things that crawl on the ground. What does it mean on the ground? La Hoitzi es a zizin shabad joshim. That comes to exclude the zizin, which are some kind of insects that you find in lentils. Those are not al ha'aretz, so they're only inside the lentil. Also the fleas or gnats or whatever that you find in klisin. Rashi translates klisin as chickpeas. The Rambam understands them to be some kind of date. Anyway, the telas shabatsmarim, and the worms that you find in regular dates, the shabagrogris, and in dried dates. So that's one braisa, that if you find these insects or worms or what have you in these fruits or vegetables, then they're allowed because they're not al ha'aretz.
We used to call yatush mosquito.
Mosquito, gnat, same difference. Some kind of small. Yeah.
It's not considered
al ha'aretz. That's the point.
Because
it's not on the ground. It's in these fruits or vegetables.
The vegetables come from the ground.
Of course. Hold on. That's what we're gonna say. The tanya. Listen. We're trying to prove Shmuel's point that there's a that if you have worms, that if you have worms or bugs that you find in fruit that was still attached to the ground, it's also. We're trying to say that we can prove Shmuel's point by contrasting two braises. One braise says that if you find worms or bugs or whatever in lentils or klisim and so forth, then it's allowed. V'tanya idach, on the other hand, you have another braise that says kol sheretz asheretz al ha'aretz, that takes it the other way around. That says that when it says any sheretz which crawls on the ground, l'rabos telas should be ikri zeitz and should be ikri gfanim. That comes to include also that you wouldn't be allowed to eat the worms that are on the roots of that are on the roots of olive trees and that are on the roots of grapevines. So my lab, so shouldn't we assume that we have two braises, one that is learning from Al Ha'aretz a Heter, and the other is learning from Al Ha'aretz an Iser? Shouldn't we assume Aidi Bateva? Both braises are talking about that the actual fruit itself or vegetable itself develop worms. So one would be talking about where it developed worms while it was attached, and the other one where after it was detached. So the second braisa would be saying it's also if it developed while it's attached. Should the ikre zeisim and ikre gfanim would mean not that the worms are on the roots of the means when it's not growing, when it's picked from the ground. So the second braisa that I mentioned ikre zeisim and ikre gfanim would not mean the actual roots of the trees themselves. You're not going to take worms from the actual roots of the trees. It means as long as you had the worms developing in the fruit while it was attached to the tree, which in turn is attached to the roots, then it's also, which is exactly what Shmuel was saying. And the other one would be saying if the worms developed in them only after they were detached. So you harvested some lentils, and later on you came and found that the lentils are infested with bugs, then it would be mutter. That. So if you understand the two braises that way, then you have a proof for Shmuel. Hey, the Gemara says, loy,
If you understand it.
If you understand. The answer is loy, not necessarily. Should you understand it that way? Both brises may be talking about that the womb developed while the fruit was attached. So it's not a contradiction because one is talking about worms in the actual fruit, and the other one is talking about worms that are on the tree.
Nothing to do with
attached. So nothing to do with attached and detached, right? In other words, what you could say is that actually both brises are actually telling us that it's mutter. Both brises are telling us a case which is mutter, namely, in other words, it's mutter if the worms develop while they're detached, for sure. It's even mutter if they develop while they're attached. It's not necessarily a proof for sure. The second brisa that I mentioned, kol asheres, is literally talking about the roots of the tree. If you have worms that develop on the roots of the grapevine or the roots of the olive tree, then those are definitely sheres, asheres, alaoris, because they definitely crawled on the ground. But if they develop in the fruit, even when the fruit is attached, not as long as it didn't actually come out of the fruit, maybe it's not necessarily ulcer. So not necessarily is there a proof. In fact, you could see that from the actual wording of the Braisa, because Tony Telas should be Ikri Zaysim should be Ikri Kvanim, because after all, the wording the Braisa used is that you have these worms on the roots of the olive trees or on the roots of the grapevines. Implying Ikri means the roots. Yeah. Or the trunks at least, whatever. Shmamina, so that proves that not necessarily are these Braisas addressing anything about attached versus detached fruit. Now,
the roots versus the
fruit itself. If you have them on the roots, where they're on the outside of the tree,
from the roots.
If they came into the fruit, fine. But in Machzik and Isser, if you don't see any evidence of it, so one second. The question, first of all, is that halacha like Shmuel or not? So on the one hand, Tosfos discusses. On the one hand, we can take the view since the Gemara was trying to bring a proof for him and it wasn't able to. So therefore, and in fact, the proof involves us saying that both brises are assuming that worms in fruit you're allowed to eat, bugs in fruit you're allowed to eat. Therefore, that would imply that halacha is not like Shmuel. So therefore, it wouldn't matter whether they developed in the fruit while it was growing or afterwards. It should be mutter. On the other hand, yeah, that Tosfos mentioned that. On the other hand, so that the Riva and Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Nisano, and the Riva, also three of the great Balei Tosfos say that halacha is not like Shmuel. On the other hand, they bring from the halachas gzolus and from shiltas that the halacha is like Shmuel. Why? Because earlier in the perek,
but not for the same reason.
Earlier in the perek, we brought this statement of Shmuel. We mentioned that Rav Huna had said that any invertebrates can't live for more than 12 months, and we brought Shmuel din in that connection. So therefore, that implies the halacha is like Shmuel, because otherwise the Gemara wouldn't have brought it over there without questioning it.
What's the connection?
The connection is that if the Gemara brought it over there as a given, that Rav Huna had said a certain din, that invertebrates can't live for 12 months, and we brought, from that, we see a proof for what Shmuel says, Kishra's sheet, and the Gemara went on to discuss the practical implications of it in halacha. That implies that the halacha must be like Shmuel, say the halacha's girl
over there.
What do you mean over there and over here? That's the same statement. So once we have over there, so okay, over here, all it is the Gemara is saying you can't necessarily prove from the Braises like Shmuel. Maybe the Braises hold like him, maybe they don't. But it's not necessarily an actual contradiction to him.
So therefore, the halacha
would end up being like Shmuel, that if they developed worms or bugs while they were attached, they would be ulcer. Only if they developed after they're detached, would they be mutter. Now, then Tosfos goes on to say that you find in certain kinds of beans and things, sometimes you find a black spot on the outside, and then you take off the peel, and you find bugs underneath that.
Right.
Tosfos says those you can be mutter. Because even if you argue that they grew inside the fruit when it was attached, but Tosfos learns in order for them to be also, you would need another thing. We're saying over here in our sugya that it has to be hasheres hasheres alaris. Sheres implies that it moves. So if it had no room to move around in there, then it should be mutter, Tosfos says.
But it's on the surface of the fruit.
In other words, no, it's right. So if it's on the surface, then it would be osur, right. Or if you can see that it made a big enough hole in there that's actually able to move around in there, then yes. Many other Rishonim, such as the Rashba and others, disagree with Tosfos. They say no, even if it doesn't have any room to move around, it doesn't matter. Once it developed in there, they say sheret doesn't necessarily mean moves. It means it grows, it reproduces, whatever. So therefore, they would say that even in those cases, it would be awesome.
Very often you see within a fruit a ton of are little bugs that move around with the fruit. There's a hole, and they're all turning around.
Okay, so then it depends. If they developed in the fruit while it was attached, then you have a problem. They're also. If they developed in the fruit only after it was picked, then we're saying they would be mutter, as long as they didn't actually come out of the fruit, which is the next point the Gemara is going to take up over here, as long as they stayed within the fruit. Tosfos is saying the other way around. Tosfos is saying that even if they developed in the fruit while it was growing, but they didn't actually move around, you just have that black bottom. Move around within the fruit itself.
So that's what I'm saying. They do move around within the fruit.
So if they do, and they develop while it was on the tree, then yes, it would be also. Even Tosfos would agree with that. Obviously, that's what the Gemara is saying over here. That, again, according to Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Nathanael and the Riva, it wouldn't matter whether they developed in the fruit while it was growing or not. They would say the halacha is not like Shmuel. Those worms would be mutter because they weren't actually on the ground. They were within the fruit. If we say like the halacha is gdolus and the shiltus, that the halacha is like Shmuel, then if they grew in the fruit, then they would be also. But even then, Tosfos says if they grew in the fruit but had no room to move around, they would be mutter. So you wind up with a number of different opinions of Rishonim.
What's the most common opinion of Rishonim?
The most common...
Is it like Shmuel or not?
So in Shulchan Aruch, I believe it brings both opinions. Okay. So then, fine. So what's the most common? I don't know, but... He says like this: worms that grow in fruit while it's still attached, it's considered shoda sala aretz, and it's also, even if they didn't move around, as long as he does accept what Tosfos says, though, they do have to at least be able to move around in there. The fact that they didn't come out of the fruit doesn't matter. So if you find sometimes you find if you find a black dot on the outside, I mean, you take off the black dot, you find bugs underneath them, and the bugs didn't move, then they're mutter because they're in a narrow place, so it can't be called a shoda sala aretz. But if you find them in the pods, then it says in Shulchan Aruch, then they're also, because in the pods, they already have room to move around. Yeah.
So one second. If they're in the fruit, and they haven't moved out of the fruit, you're allowed to eat the fruit. You're not allowed to eat the bug.
No. When we're talking about what you're allowed to eat, we mean the bug itself also. The same way as we were talking about drinking the water. Yeah. If it's disgusting to you, then definitely not, because it's about the shatsu. But we're talking about if you're not disgusted by it. Sometimes you find in a black dot, which is where the worm is starting to develop, then that part would be ulcer. So the Shach talks about over here that how does that fit with what the Machaber said before. So one answer is in fact it is two different opinions, Tosfos versus the Rashba. But you have also the question maybe you should remove it, but it doesn't ask for the rest of the thing. It was cooked with whatever the shaft stuff is. Okay. Anyway. So the bottom line is, when we have nowadays the whole concept of checking fruits and vegetables for bugs, we're maximum, obviously, but also it's mainly because there's reason to think that they developed while the fruit was still growing. And if they're on the outside of the fruit, then there's no question they're also if they move around on the outside of it. The only possibility that it would be mutter if it's inside the fruit and maybe it didn't move around. Okay. All right. Boy, Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef asks in this connection. You're telling me then that if the bug developed in the fruit or in the vegetable after it was picked, then you're allowed to eat it as long as it didn't actually go out of the fruit. So Rav Yosef asks, Pirsha Umesa Mahu. What happened if the bug developed in the fruit after it was picked? So we know it'll be mutter. Then what happened is it crawled out of the fruit, but as soon as it crawled out, it died. So do we say it's not Sharat al Aris, because the fact is it didn't have any chance to move on the ground before it died? Or okay, but maybe is it considered al Aris or not? Or once it goes out, you actually have a different gerusa that Rishonim bring, including the Rambam. There's a question: Pirsha Mesa Mahu. What happens if it fell out of the fruit after it was dead? So after it was dead, in other words, while it was alive, it died while it was still inside the fruit. It was definitely not Sheretz HaSheretz Al Aretz. On the other hand, the fact is, right now, it's not in the fruit. So therefore, what would be the din? Also, Rav Yosef asked Miksasa Mahu. What happens if only part of it came out?
Part of the bug,
yeah. Miksasa Kikoloi or not. Maybe it has to be the whole bug comes out for it to be ulcer. What about la'avir olamahu? What happens if it crawled out into the into the air, but it never actually reached the ground? In other words, Rashi described, let's say, for example, so you have it's crawling out of the fruit after it was picked, before it reaches the ground, before it reaches any solid surface, a person caught it in his mouth. You could say, in other words, Rashi says like this, Pirsho may say you could argue is mutter because it didn't have a chance to be roishish, didn't have a chance to move. But here it had a chance to move, and it would have, if it landed on the ground, you just caught it ahead of time. So maybe it should be also, but maybe not, because the fact that it didn't land on the ground. One second. Also, so that's la'avir ha'olamahu, teku. In all these cases, teku, and therefore we have to be machmir.
What do we say, sheret ha'sheret ha'lalet? Sheret means it's capable of
that's the thing. Do we say that it means it's capable? Or does it mean it actually moves? That's the basic question. I mean,
the Gemara seems to be saying it actually moves.
No, not necessarily. That's what we're asking, and therefore we say take it. We can't be sure. Boy Ravashi, and Ravashi asked some more questions in this regard. Lagag tmara mahu. What if the worm goes out from the inside of the date onto the top of it? We said before that if it's inside a keli, that if it's inside, for example, a barrel of beer, and it crawls out, it crawls on the walls of the barrel above the liquid level, it's still mutter. So over here, above the level of the water, but it's still inside the keli, it's mutter. So over here, when it's on top of the date itself, is that also considered it's still the same place, kind of everything, outside, but on the top, yeah. Also, another question you could ask is, what if it goes onto the top of the pit? Which Rashi explains, the worms typically develop inside the pit of the fruit. So you could argue, maybe even then, once they go out of the pit and they crawl onto the top of the pit, even though it's inside the fruit as a whole, maybe it's already considered not in their original place. Or what about mitzmara l'tzmara mahu? What happens if it goes from one date to another? In other words, it didn't go outside. You have two dates next to another, let's say. You have the worm made a hole through one, crawled into the next one, and then took up residence over there. Is it osur? Because is it considered that once it's out of the original one that it's in, it's osur? Or maybe not. It never actually went al ha'aretz. It never even went into the haver, so maybe it should be mutter. And again, the answer to all of those is also teku. So therefore, machmir. Okay. Fine. Okay, that was so far as worms in fruits and vegetables and beans and whatnot. Now let's talk about worms and bugs that you find in meat or in fish. Almond of sheshes bread ravi. Kukyoni asirim. Kukyoni worms are osir. Rashi describes that kukyoni are worms that you find in the liver and in the lungs of an animal. Tosfos says that no, we're talking about kukyoni are worms that you find in fish. They're also my time. Why would they be also? Because they don't develop inside the animal or inside the fish. May alma also, they came from the outside and then they wound up inside the body of the animal. So therefore they'd be also because they were shorted to the artist beforehand. Maski for Ravashi, however, Ravashi asks on that, how is that possible that then you would find them in the you would find them then in the liver or in the lungs or whatever, or the equivalent organs in fish. Ime alma also, if they actually came from the outside world, l'shtakhu derech beis ha'ri'i, you should expect to find them in the digestive system. Because you should assume how did they get there? Mistama is the animal swallowed them with its food. So how of all places would you find them in the liver or the lungs?
They're not going to crawl from the skin to the liver.
Right, that's the point. So therefore, in fact, the hilchos of kukyoni asiri. Nevertheless, I just skipped a couple of lines. Ikadami, another version of the discussion goes as follows. Amar of Shisha Bredir of Idi, kukyoni shoru. The second version is that of Shisha Bredir of Idi says that the kukyoni worms are mutter. My time, why would they be mutter? Minog gavli, because they grow from the animal itself, so they're not sherat aret. Amar of Ashi pshita, and Ravashi says, of course, that must be the case. Because, same thing, because if they came from the outside, you'd expect to find them in the digestive system. The fact that you don't implies they must have developed from eggs, let's say, fine, but inside the animal. So therefore, the point is, according to Rashi, they're in the liver or the lungs, so fine.
Where they come to go.
So let's say the animal inhaled them or whatever, the animal inhaled, no, not the worms themselves, let's say the animal inhaled the eggs or something. Again, on the surface, the Gemara still accepts spontaneous generation. And by the way, I mean, the Rebbe talks about in one of his letters that scientists nowadays that don't believe in it, but that's basically because they've never seen it. It doesn't prove that it could never happen. Scientists b'chlal, and I can't really say that something can never happen. They can say, according to our understanding of things and according to our experiments, it doesn't happen. Doesn't mean that they can absolutely exclude the possibility. But be that as it may, even if we don't accept spontaneous generation, okay, so the animal breathed in microscopic eggs and then they hatched in there. But again, microscopic doesn't matter in halacha. As far as halacha is concerned, they'd be considered that they grew inside the animal. So it wouldn't be asheres asheres halacha.
For example, malaria. Malaria comes through the blood. I mean, a mosquito.
Malaria parasites are too small to be seen with the
naked
eye, anyway.
That's my one. I'm choosing that example.
Okay.
And they develop in the liver, and then in the
that's
liver,
fine.
They're very visible.
Okay. But the bottom line, that's what we're talking about.
So they don't necessarily exist in the digestive system.
That's Rav Ashi's point. If they were swallowed, if they were Robi Me'alma, if they grew to a visible size outside, they wouldn't wind up in the liver or the lungs. They would wind up in the digestive system. The fact that you shaft the animal and you find these wounds in the liver or in the lungs implies... sort of. Okay. Yeah, okay, fine, whatever. Okay, but... The bottom line halacha is actually kukyoni asiri. That after all said and done, the kukyoni worms are osir. My timer, now why would they be osir, given Rav Ashi's point that if they came from the outside, you would expect to find them in the digestive system? The reason is, my timer, menem nayim, because it can happen when the creature, when the animal or the fish is sleeping, but then worms can crawl in through its nose. And from there they can get into the lungs, and from there they can get into the whole circulatory system. So therefore they can end up in the liver as well. Which, by the way, this is one of Tosfos's proofs. This is Rabbeinu Tam's proof that we're talking about fish, because the Gemara in Baba Basra mentions such a thing about fish that have worms crawl up their nostrils. So anyway, so therefore they are actually also, because there's a high likelihood that they did actually come from the outside rather than that they breathe. Okay, but they have fine. Okay, okay, so fine then.
How can you go into this?
Okay, because they have gills. Okay, so it came in through the gills.
Why don't you say most simply it went through their digestive tract?
Because then again, how does it wind up in whatever the fish is equivalent of lungs? Yeah, fine, but they don't. Okay, but the point is that we're saying that they're also because they can they're able to get in when the fish or the animal or whatever is unaware. Okay, so therefore that would explain why you don't find them in the digestive system necessarily. Okay. On the other hand, okay, continues the Gemara. Downy the bistra asiri, downy, which are another kind of worms. Now, unlike the kukyoni that we were just mentioning, which you find in the internal organs of the animal or the fish, downy you find, Rashi described, between the muscles and the skin. So those kinds, the bistra asiri, the ones you find in meat are also, for reasons that we're going to explain soon, the kavri shayan, but when you find the same thing in fish, then it's mutter, also for reasons that we're going to say.
Downy
the bistra, I mean, worms in meat. In other words, bistra, meat of animals, of land animals, as opposed to a fish. Kavra means fish. And in fact, Ravina says to his mother in that connection, the downer that you find in fish, since you're allowed to eat them, Ravina wanted to demonstrate la halacha that you're allowed to eat them. However, to eat worms, to see worms, he would be repulsed by it, and therefore would be also because Baal Tashaktu. So he asks his mother, Avlali, mix them up for me within the fish. I'm no echol, and then I'll eat them. In other words, because they're not in and of themselves. He wanted to prove that it's mutter to eat. Okay. Why would we be saying that it's mutter when it comes to fish? Why would it be any different than this that we learn in a braisa? That when the pasuk says they're dead bodies, you have to consider disgusting. That includes the downing in animals.
Downing
is these worms that you find between the flesh and the skin. So why would it be mutter in the case of fish? Amalei, and so Ravina answers him, Hachi Hashva. How are you thinking to compare animals to fish? They're two different things. Behema b'shchitzu the mishtaria. An animal becomes mutter by shechting. So therefore the worms are not included. Given that the shchita doesn't help because worms are not subject to shchita, the isurayu kaiman. Therefore they retain their original iser. Because the Torah says that if you want to eat an animal, you have to shecht it. Shchita helps for the entire animal, but it doesn't help for the worms. However, Avol Dugin, Basifa Ba'al Mishri. On the other hand, when it comes to fish, we know you don't have to shech them. All you have to do is gather them. Vahani, Kigavlan, Behateta Kogavlan. So therefore, in effect, these worms, when they're developing inside the fish, they're developing Beheter. Because the fish itself doesn't require shechita to be master them, and therefore, to that extent, the worms can be mutter along with the fish. In other words, the logic is, Rashi says, in animals, you have a problem of Eivim and Achai. When they're growing inside the animal, they're growing from Eivim and Achai.
Right.
And they have a chayus of their own.
Right.
So it's one thing we're going to learn in the next perek that you have a pregnant animal, you shech, and the unborn baby you're allowed to eat. That's different because it becomes mutter with the shechita of its mother. The shechita automatically helps for the embryo. But over here, the shechita of the animal doesn't help for the worms. Therefore, they're still also in effect as Eivim and Achai. As opposed to with fish, you don't have a concept of Eivim and Achai because you don't have to shech them. Therefore, they're
Achai, we're talking about Toloim, that you're not allowed to eat meat or ice.
Because they're, okay, but we said that there are certain kinds of Toloim, depending on where they grew, that you're allowed to. These are not Sheret HaSheret HaLa'aretz. You don't have the issue of Sheret HaSheret HaLa'aretz. The only question is, do you have any way of being master them? In the case of animals, you do not, because the Shechita is not effective for the worms, because they're considered a separate entity. In the case of fish, which you don't require, so therefore they remain Eivim and Achai. In the case of fish, since they don't need shechita, then it's mutter.
The worms that are found in animals, the sherets.
That we find between the muscles and the skin. Again, the ones that we find inside in the kishkis of the animal, or whatever we said, are also because they came from the outside. They may have come in while the animal was sleeping or whatever. But the ones under the skin, those we're saying, in animals they're usur because the shechita of the animal doesn't help to be matter them. In the case of fish, they're mutter because fish don't require shechita. The Rambam, by the way, has a different understanding of this Gemara. I'm not seeing why you don't see the difference. Animals require... Because it's not al ha'aretz. It's not on the ground. It's inside the animal.
You can say the same in the behemoth.
But the behemoth, the problem is not the sheretz. The problem is that it's Eivim min Achai. They're not part of the animal insofar as that the shechita of the animal is master them. Whereas the fish don't require shechita. Now, with that said, the Rambam has a different understanding. That the Rambam learns that actually the only kind of case where it would be mutter that Rambam learns is where the fish developed worms after it was salted, for example, after it was preserved.
Okay.
He learns that they would be also if they developed in the live fish just as much as in the live animal. Although the Noisa Kalim have a bit of a time understanding how that Rambam would understand
all
the
fish is basically.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Okay.
In a fish, you don't need that, so therefore that.
And in the fish, there's no shechita.
Exactly. Therefore, the worms become mutter along with the fish. Right. Now, so you have also, we know, we all remember that also about 15 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, there came up a whole issue as far as worms and certain kinds of fish. And the truth is, it's not a new thing. This issue has surfaced every so often. In fact, in previous times, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked about it, and was master, many other Gerli Yisroel were master on the basis of our Gemara over here, that was saying certain kinds, you have the shechita of the Rambam, fine, but the Rambam, I just said, says that any worms that develop in fish while they're alive are also, only if they develop in it after it's caught and salted, would they be mutter, but the poskim don't pass skin like him. So they pass skin that the fish that are under the skin of the fish, the worms that are under the skin of the fish would be mutter. So for example, it's told actually that they asked for Moshe Feinstein one time about this, the worms that you find under the skin. He said they're mutter. They asked him, will you write a tshuva about it? He says, what do I need to write a tshuva for? It says right here in the Gemara, you don't need any tshuva for something that it says clearly like that. With that said, the last time this came up, about 15 years ago, you had a number of rabbanim who argued that it should be osur based on various considerations. Maybe the worms were inside the viscera of the fish and then got transferred to the flesh of it, or maybe especially because they processed them differently. Maybe you have a greater number of such worms than you did in olden times because of the way they process fish nowadays. Maybe you have, since scientifically they always come from the outside, even if it is microscopic eggs, maybe that's a reason to ask. It. So again, you ended up with a whole machlokas about it. I think in general, Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael were machmer on it, and Rabbanim here in America, such as again Ravelsky, were makel on it.
What about if they're nefarious to your health?
If they're nefarious to your health, that's different, of course. Then there's nothing to talk about. The shmartimor and nashasetim, the shmartimor and the nashasetim. We're talking about if they're not. Okay, let's finish up. Turn it up on them. Okay. So now we say, okay, let's finish off with a couple of psukim at the end of Parshas, at the end of Parshas Shemini, after it talks about the various creatures that you're allowed to eat and not allowed to eat. Then you have a few psukim that continue talking about shrotim, and it says like this, holach al gochon, it says any creature that crawls on its stomach. So what does that mean? Zen nachash, that refers to a snake, because the Torah is telling you you're not allowed to eat snakes.
It'd be a crocodile, also a crab.
Maybe, okay. Koil, l'rabes ha-shilshul, the word koil, it says koil holach al gochon, that also comes to include earthworms, that's a doimel ha-shilshul and any other worms that are similar to that, worms, caterpillars, or whatever. Shilshul is Rashi actually describes, yeah, it's a long, skinny worm that you often find them in the garbage. Yeah, but past this earthworm. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Scarabs are beetles or something. Oh, okay. I can't die. Okay, fine. Okay, so anything like that, you're not allowed to eat. It's interesting thing, by the way, I don't know how much time we have to talk about it, but the vav of the word gochon over there, kol helech ha-gochon, the Gemara tells us in Kedushin is the middle letter of the Torah, and you have there's a vort from the Vilna Gaon on it that says that what it means is the essence, so it means the central thing of the Torah is not to eat snakes, not necessarily not to eat snakes, gashmiastic ones, but in other words, not to have to do anything that has to do with the Nachash HaKadmoni, the original snake that tempted Adam and Chava, which is the symbol of Sitra, Achra, and Klippa. Anyway, okay. Al Arba, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to eat any creatures, any insects that walk on four legs. The Akra, that refers to scorpions. Scorpions have more than four legs, but they mainly use four legs for walking. Toil Horlech, when it says anything that walks on four legs. L'rabba, it's a chikushis versus a jovel chikushis. It comes to include also beetles and anything else that's similar to beetles in that way. Marber Aglaim, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to eat anything that has Marber Aglaim, that has many legs. Then Nodol, that means centipede. And again, it says ad kol marbir aglayim. So ad kol up to everything means l'rabas is a doima, that's a doima l'doima. You're also not allowed to eat other kinds of things that are similar to them, or ones that are similar to the ones that are similar to them. Millipede, for example, and so forth. Yeah. Okay. Tanya, one last thing we learn in a braisa of Yosef and Damascus Omer, Leviathan dog tahu. The Leviathan, the one that Hashem is going to serve to the tradition, lots of love, is a kosher fish.
That's not right.
It's a Leviathan, you know, it's a fish, you should know that it has fins and scales. Shinema, because you have Psukim and Eov that describe it, that say, Gava Afrike Mavinim Tachtav Chadude Chorus. These are actually parts of two different Psukim. The pride of its strong protectors, underneath him are sharp pieces of earthenware. So Afrike Mavinim, the strong protector, is Eva Kaskasin Shabai, that refers to his scales, which protect him. So he's proud of his strong scales. Of Chadudei Chores, when it says underneath him are sharp pieces of earthenware, Elus Napir, and Shepardeach Behen, that refers to the fins that it swims with, because the fins are underneath it, they grow from underneath the body, and they're sharp like pieces of earthenware. So the scales protect it, so therefore we see that the Leviathan is a kosher fish, because it has fins and scales. Okay, Marsha asks the question, and what's the chiddush? Of course, we know Hashem is going to serve it to the tzaddikim, la'as and lava. So what's the chiddush in knowing that why do we need to prove that's kosher? So there's a couple of different answers. Let's see. Marsha's own answer is, because the Gemara wants to prove, not that we know it's kosher. How do we know the Leviathan is a fish? Maybe Leviathan is a kind of bird or something. From these psukim that describe it as having fins and scales, obviously it's a fish. You have a couple of other explanations that are given also. The Aruch gives an explanation, since you have a different pasuk that compares the Leviathan to a snake, and we just mentioned that snakes are not kosher, you would think maybe the Leviathan is also a non-kosher species, therefore we're told that not. And you have a couple of Achronim, Maratz Chayus, and some others talk about the idea is, we know the famous thing that Torah Chadoshim Me'ititetze, that when it comes to that Suda for the Tzadikim, you're going to have, it says that the Leviathan kills the Shor HaBor with its fins, shechts it with its fins, and the Shor HaBor kills the Leviathan with its fins. Now, fins are not kosher for Shechita because they're not smooth. And the Medrash says that Hashem is like going to have to come up with a special heter at that point to be master of the Shor HaBor to eat, even though it was shechted with fins. So therefore, based on that, you would think the same thing, maybe the Leviathan essentially is not a kosher species. Hashem will find some heter for it at that point. So, no, therefore, Rabbi Yossi Aglili is telling us, Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus is telling us that, no, it is in and of itself a kosher fish.
But we don't know which
one it is. It's some kind of large fish.
Is
it a large fish? It's a large fish, yeah. Okay. Hadron Allah Eilu Tereza.
So we might.